Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh!
Let him play!
He wins. Great steak. Smells like poop.
Honestly, like if Urban Meyer wants to come to Connecticut, bring him on. I mean, come on. I'll take him too.
Nia Jackson, I think, weighs 280 pounds.
Oh!
Can we isolate that clip? Nia Jackson weighs 280 pounds. Oh!
Let her play.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big football show. Good to have you with us from the Dave in the City studios in really chilly Southern California. And rain to come tomorrow, about the same time that we're going to do our random questions show. So, A three podcast show, very exciting week in the city. And if you missed it, we had the NBA report yesterday. That's on the feed, Dave in the City Out West on Apple Podcasts or at didcow.com. Tonight, we're going to dig into football. We're going to recap quite a bit. We first will talk about the college football championship, the CFP playoff, and the CFP title game between LSU and Clemson. A great performance by LSU and Joe Burrow in particular, and Chase and Jefferson, the receivers. It was really an incredible game, but we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the bowl season, and then we'll get into the NFL and talk about what's been going on there as we bring our football panel back. Two of the three regulars are back with us tonight, for sure. We may hear from Ron as well, but Andy and John are online, and they will join us for sure to start this program. So... let's not waste any time. Much to recap, the NFL playoffs in full swing and some big shockers in that league. And not so many shockers in college football, but a coronation of what was a fantastic season for the Tigers in the Bayou. Let's do it. All right, so football time. Let's talk about the college football championship and the NFL playoffs in progress. So let's bring in our panel. We'll start with John in Connecticut. John, good to have you back. How's it going tonight?
Doing well, Dave. Happy New Year to you and everyone else, and Andy, who's on the program as well. So glad to be back. Hope everyone had a good holiday, and certainly lots to recap in both the NFL and college football. Another season has come to an end.
Yeah, it's that time, you know. We're coming up on the last regular football weekend of the year. And same to you. Happy New Year and everything. I hope holidays are good to you as well. Let's say hello to Andy. Andy, good to have you back with us. How's it going tonight?
Oh, not too bad, everyone. Little cold winter time. Sometimes I just got to think about week zero next August to keep the cold burning in there. But, yeah, good to talk about some – Pigskin put a ribbon on the season of college.
Yeah, definitely, and it was quite a ribbon. You know, the championship game on Monday had a really good start. I think Clemson really gave LSU a tough time, but then LSU, you know, from I don't know, like maybe the second quarter onward, really crossed up Joe Burrow pretty. I mean, sorry, Trevor Lawrence pretty badly, and he didn't look really comfortable out there. But all in all, I think you got to give a lot of props to the Tigers of LSU for just a dominant season, punctuated by a dominant second half. So I'll say no more about the game. Let's give it to you guys. We will start with John. Your thoughts on what has been a tremendous ending to a tremendous season for LSU?
Yeah, it was really just a continuation of what they had done all year. Just the most prolific offense, certainly in LSU history, one of the greatest offenses in college football history. If you just look at the numbers, I mean, Joe Burrow ended up with, what, close to 60 touchdowns? I mean, just unbelievable. And, you know, their offensive coordinator, just or offensive passing game assistant, whatever you want to call him, just went to Carolina, to the NFL, to be Matt Rhule's offensive coordinator. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out. But it was just a fabulous, you know, season by them. And he continued it on Monday night. You know, like you said, Dave, they kind of got off to a slow start. Maybe they were a little tight, a little nervous, you know, whatever you want to say. Maybe they were just there's about, 2.5 weeks in between the semifinals and the championship game. So maybe there's just a little rust there. I don't know, whatever it was. But They certainly got going in the second quarter, and really Clemson didn't threaten much until it was still a game into the third, and once Clemson kind of got on the board there, but then LSU just put them away and really couldn't do much of anything else the rest of the game. And there really isn't much to say. They were the most dominant team all year long. They certainly, they won at Alabama. They beat Florida. They destroyed Georgia in the SEC championship game. So, you certainly can put them up there with, I don't know about the greatest college football teams of all time. I've seen some people saying that. I don't know about that. I mean, certainly one of the best offenses, like I mentioned, statistically. But, certainly the last 10, 15 years, yeah, absolutely, they're one of the best teams. But it was a fitting end to a good season, and certainly the best team won. Give credit to Clemson for kind of giving it their best shot in the first half. You knew that Dabo would kind of have them ready to play. He was playing up the whole underdog angle, and, this is a road game for us kind of thing all week. So they'd be ready. But I think there was something to be said about how basically they were playing just little sisters of the poor every week in the ACC. And when it finally came down to playing like real competition, they couldn't go touchdown for touchdown with LSU. And really, no one could have. It would have been interesting to see if Ohio State had held on to that game in the semifinals, if they might have given LSU, I wouldn't say a better game, because Clemson was in it in the third quarter, but if it would have been a game in, like, say, the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, if Ohio State would have been there. But, Clemson, they did what they had to do in the semifinals, got some breaks from the refs, and then won the game. So, that it is what it is for them. But LSU with a great performance to cap off their season, and we'll remember them as one of the better offensive teams in recent memory, for sure.
A really extraordinary year for their offense, absolutely, John. And they did it again in a championship setting against what was said to be, what statistically was, one of the best defenses in the sport, to a tune of a 42-25 final score in that championship game. So let's go to Andy. Let's get your thoughts on the national championship.
Yeah, LSU did what they needed to do. John alluded to it. A lot of people mention it in these big games, with all the hoopla surrounding it, the break in between the regular season, the first couple of minutes. Sometimes it's hard to get these players like in full gear, and sometimes they look a little slow out of the gate. Whether it's a Final Four in basketball in the big dome, or a championship game in college where even the most prolific offense might, come out of the gate and go 3-and-out on their first drive or whatnot. But what was kind of telling is when Clemson went out like 17-7, LSU didn't flinch a bit, and, they scored 21 answer themselves, basically. And Burrow took that hit. I don't know if he got the wind knocked out of him in the going into halftime, but there was a little window of opportunity for Clemson. They got it within 28-25. I think LSU like third and pretty long, and they threw a I don't know if it was second down or third down, but it was the key point of the game where LSU threw that screen pass, and it was the ball almost hit one of the linemen, but it was caught and LSU turned that into a huge play, and they kind of regained control of the game right there. Lawrence, I guess he had never lost a game before in his life, high school and college, before last night or Monday night. But he just wasn't as crisp as what the highlights. I only seen highlights of Clemson for the most of the year, except for that Texas A&M game. I'm not going to pretend to see a lot of Clemson games, but he was off. He was overthrowing a lot of his passes downfield. The fumble late basically sealed any sort of backdoor cover opportunities, but he made some good throws in the beginning of the game, but LSU started to pressure him, and not even like with sacks, but just like the threat of being pursue just kind of seemed to have rushed his throws and get him out of a rhythm. And yeah, Clemson, they've been charmed. They've had great success for a handful of years now. I think the whole Dabo Swinney act of we're just a little school in a little town is wearing thin a little bit, because you were favored in a lot of your games, like in all your games this year. So, and you were favored, I forget what the Ohio State Clemson game was, but what the line was, but you know, they're not this little choo-choo train anymore. They're a powerhouse. And they took advantage of a very down year in the ACC this year. And LSU, from basically the beginning of the season, in that game in Texas, they basically, everything that was in front of them, they devoured. And they should get all the credit. And I was watching this game yesterday, or on Monday, I forget, today's Wednesday. And in the very beginning of the game, when both teams were pretty crisp on offense, when Clemson was actually getting some big plays downfield, taking that lead, I was saying to myself, you know, there's so much wasted words and hot air and tweets, you know, starting in November about like who's the 15 that's gonna be left out? Like, does it matter at the end? LSU wasn't gonna lose to any of this, you know. I'm glad all these like analysts got a lot of mileage out of debating like Baylor over Utah or Oregon. I mean, they're all playing second fiddle to LSU. So that's what I was just trying to document right there.
Yeah, it was a special team, and you're right. It just sometimes the teams will just have that kind of year where just nobody's going to get in their way, and not even to the point where they can even cover the spread. In these last couple games, I mean, Georgia didn't come anywhere near them. And then Oklahoma got completely destroyed. And then effectively Clemson did in the second half as well. So it's really been a great year. Now, the real question that you have after a season like this, especially with the news today, with John alluded to it, you know, a bunch of their guys are leaving for other pastures. Brady's going to, I think, yeah, he's going to the NFL. You have... I did see that. I think it was Jefferson who's going to declare for the NFL, and then one of their defensive guys too. So it's going to be a little different. And just to take that a step further, I looked at the futures for next year, and as it turns out, it is Clemson who's going to be favored to win the championship, not LSU. And I think a lot of it has to do with Lawrence coming back and Burrow going to the NFL and getting drafted by, you know, either the Bungles or the Browns, somebody pretty bad. So, I guess that's what we can go to just to close this up. You know, is this a 1 year deal for LSU, or do you think they'll be back for more next year, just with a different quarterback and such? And John, I'll start with you.
Well, we don't know who their quarterback's going to be. I honestly don't know who their backup is. I saw that they could be going in like the grad transfer market, the transfer portal scenario, that the kid from Stanford, Costello, could be an option. From Houston, De'Aaron King is transferring, so he could be an option. So we don't know who's playing quarterback. I did see that their running back, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, just declared for the draft. So they have a lot of personnel losses, and I think Burrow is just so good. You can't expect that level of production. And then the offensive assistant, like I mentioned, going to the Panthers. So I wouldn't make them the favorite next year either. I think it's easy to say with Lawrence coming back and the ACC still going to be pretty weak, I think it's pretty fair to make Clemson the favorite, in my opinion.
Yep, and absolutely on Clemson, you know. And behind them, what you have is you have Ohio State and I think one other team, maybe Alabama, I think, is the other team. So, Andy, let's give you the same question.
Yeah, it's going to be a transition, obviously, for LSU. They'll probably have to... As John said, you know, they don't have a quarterback. I did read something about De'Aaron King last night. He might consider Arkansas because I guess he's got ties with the OC that they just hired. It might be Art Briles' son. I don't know. It's a lot of moving and shaking. But yeah, LSU have question marks next year. Obviously, I mean, they're not going to go complete regression mode and go to say 7-5, I don't think, but they'll probably take a back seat to arguably Auburn. Auburn's returning a bunch of guys, and
I would even argue Alabama. Alabama's probably ready to replenish more than LSU. And yeah, a lot of that LSU talent and production was, you know, pretty dominant with Burrow, and Clemson for, you know, they got Lawrence. You know, Lawrence will basically, he is what Burrow is for Clemson. And in a down year again for ACC, who's gonna be their number one threat? You know, is it gonna be Florida State with Norvell at the helm? Is it gonna be, you know, it's not gonna be Miami, I don't think. So yeah, they're just gonna be a bully in that conference again. No offense to, you know, the BC folks or anyone like that.
I think you're right, guys. I think that between the two, Clemson will have a clearer path to the championship next year going in, you know. So that rep puts a bow on the season. Now comes the good part. We get to recap the bowl season in totality, and there are a lot of ups and downs, and I'm sure much to discuss. So, John, I'm going to give it to you for your bowl season recap.
Oh, man. Where do we begin? Well, I mean, Bowl Mania was going pretty well, and then January 1st, I went 0-4, and that was the end of that. I was doing my best pick of the entire bowl season, just Texas just absolutely destroyed Utah, just like we talked about, and I was doing so great, and then January 1st just was not my day. But in any event, yeah, there were some interesting bowl games. It was really funny, the game that we all said we would not watch in our backyard, the Quick Lane Bowl between Pitt and Eastern Michigan, turned out to be one of the best bowls of the entire bowl season. Of course, we watched it. I mean, you had a crazy back-and-forth game. You had the Eastern Michigan quarterback, Mike Glass, throwing punches at the end of the game, like punching a Pitt player. I think he punched a ref. That was just a completely bizarre game. And honestly, that's why you love bowl games for a scenario like that. And then earlier in the day, you have Louisiana Tech and Bob Diaco throwing a shutout over Miami, who clearly didn't want to be there. And I think we all saw that one coming, too. And it got Diaco a job at Purdue as the defensive coordinator. So we will watch out for that next year. Certainly, we will keep an eye on their games. Let me see here. Some of the earlier games, like the Kent State-Utah State game was pretty fun. Kent State, that was a huge win for them. Really exciting game, 51-41 final score. Let's see what else here. Dave, your USC team did not show up. It was just one of those, like, you know, the air raid offense against the steady Turk Ferentz defense just could not do anything. And the USC defense just got trucked by the Iowa offense. They just did whatever they wanted. So that had to be disappointing for you, Dave. Let's see. Temple, Rod Carey, he's not the gift that keeps on giving in bowl games. He was like 0-6 at Northern Illinois, and then again just got completely destroyed by North Carolina, 55-13. And I will say, we're talking about teams in the ACC for next year. I'll say North Carolina might be the biggest challenge or biggest threat to Clemson as of right now. Sam Howell, he's a really good looking quarterback, and say what you want about Mac Brown, he did a pretty good job this year. We laughed at UNC hiring him, but that was a pretty good season for them, and I think he's recruiting pretty well, so they're only going to get better, and Sam Howell's a real player, so we'll watch out for them next year. So the Pinstripe Bowl, Michigan State beat Wake Forest, whatever, but I guess the news from that is that Jamie Newman is transferring, the Wake Forest quarterback, and like, I don't get the hype over him, to be honest with you. Like, never did I watch him, and then he's going to be going to Georgia, it looks like. Never once did I watch him, and now that Georgia gets him, I'm going to say, oh, wow, like Georgia's going to win the national championship now. Like, I don't know. I just didn't see it watching him at Wake Forest in the few games that I saw. But maybe in a better system with better players, I don't know. I just don't see that, in my opinion. The Cheez-It Bowl was really interesting between Air Force and Washington State. The first drive of the game, Washington State gets down to like to the 1 yard line, and you know, first and goal, second and goal, third and goal. They can't get it in. On fourth and goal, they go for it. And then Air Force literally goes 99 yards and takes up like 12 minutes of the entire rest of the first quarter to go ahead 7-0. And that's the worst possible thing for Washington State because their run defense is so bad that they got behind. I think it would have been a different game if they had scored that touchdown. to go ahead, and they actually had a chance to go ahead at the end of the half and threw an interception. They were just playing catch-up all game, and that's pretty much why they lost. And then Leach moves on to the SEC to go to Mississippi State, and that'll be, man, we can't wait to see that, his air raid in the SEC. I don't think it's going to turn out too well for him, but, you know, we'll see. The biggest egg of the bowl season, the biggest egg laid, I should say, even worse than Temple, in my opinion, was Iowa State. But I'm done with Matt Campbell. Like, you can't show up for a game against Notre Dame, who clearly, like, Notre Dame didn't want to play in the Camping World Bowl. I know that. I get it. I get it. They won 33-9, but Iowa State was completely unprepared. Just turnovers, penalties, just horrendous play. And I'm done thinking of this guy as a big coach. You can't get your team ready to play against Notre Dame. That was just absolutely horrendous, in my opinion. So we're done with him for now. Let's see here. I mentioned Texas and Utah. The Kentucky-Virginia Tech game, that was really exciting. Kentucky literally just could not complete a forward pass all game. They're just running the ball all game until the very end when Lynn Bowden finally completed like a perfect pass to win the game. So that was another exciting Belk Bowl. Seems to get pretty good games with that all year. Every year, I mean. The Sun Bowl was pretty much a disaster. I had Florida State in that, and they really should have won. They had like six turnovers. That was just such an ugly game. Seems like the Sun Bowl is like that every year. And then the last game, Wisconsin should have won the Rose Bowl. And that was another just a tough loss if you have Wisconsin. Just completely dominated Oregon on yardage, but just a lot of fluke turnovers. One on that punt where the Oregon player literally just took the ball off the Wisconsin punter's hands and ran it in for a touchdown. And then Wisconsin's trying to almost run out the clock in the fourth quarter, and their receiver fumbles on one of those jet sweeps. And then Herbert scores on the next play, and, you know, that's the end of it. And that was just a tough loss for anyone like myself who had Wisconsin. The New Year's Six games really weren't that great. I'll let Andy touch on some of those. The last one I'll mention, the Gator Bowl, Indiana and Tennessee. Indiana up 22-9 with like 4 minutes left, and let Tennessee come back to win. Touchdown, onside kick, recovery, and then a touchdown. And I think Dave assisted with that comeback by texting, you know, joking about Tennessee not being back, and of course they come back to win the game. But I can laugh about it now, but it wasn't funny at the time. It was a really exciting bowl season, I would say. Pretty much got a chance to watch a little bit of most of all the games. And, you know, they certainly didn't disappoint this year. So I'll be interested to hear some of Andy's thoughts on any of these games.
Yeah, me as well. I ultimately stubbed my own toe by that stupid text. I mean, I needed Indiana to win that game for our Bowl Mania scenario. I really should have thought that through. That was such a dumb decision. And then on the USC game, I mean, their defense stinks. I do agree that, you know, Ron was making the point when we were doing the preview that they had a, you know, sneaky good year, and it was not bad, but they got a long way to go. I mean, their defense continues to be pretty mediocre, and Iowa just took advantage of their tackles, and it was just rough. Like, that was rough. And then what was the other thing? Oh, the Belk Bowl. If I had a funhouse, I would get slammed pretty hard for my Belk Bowl comment in the preview, because I thought that was going to be a miserable bowl. That was a great game. Really great game. So those are my comments. Andy, let's go to you for the bowl recap.
Yeah, I watched a good deal of, you know, whether it's over Christmas vacation or even around New Year's when you're back at work, but it's not like super busy and you're just watching games and tweeting about it. Like that Potato Bowl on the Friday, January 3rd, that was actually entertaining. 2 years in a row now where Nevada's just been involved in, you know, just only bowls for degenerates. Nevada was in that Arkansas State Bowl that Checker remembers fondly last year. This year they were also involved in some Mongo hijink show. Ohio had that game in the bag. I think it was like 30-9. And the line was like went up all the way to 9.5 at the end. So if you had Nevada, you waited late to take Nevada, you got lucky because they ended up losing by 9. But Frank Solich, you took the, you know, a lot of things had to go wrong for Ohio not to cover that line. But just a degenerate Potato Bowl, that was interesting. I was a little down on Gus Malzahn.
on the Outback Bowl. I think every game except for week one, when Auburn came back and beat Oregon, and even that cover was lucky because, you know, we all saw that game. But every other game with Auburn, I was on the losing end, you know, bet against them against Alabama, bet on them, you know, against Florida, bet on them against Georgia. So I'm done until next year, obviously, with Gus Malzahn and Bo Nix. Because I expect a little more out of Auburn in the Outback Bowl. And I was down on Minnesota because of how they ended their regular season, laying an egg in the Big Ten championship game. Oh, I'm sorry. No, the game was home against Wisconsin in the cold. You know, it was snowing, and they just laid an egg in the second half of that game. So I was a little down on P.J. Fleck. The Oregon game, Oregon-Wisconsin Rose Bowl, that was, yeah, as John mentioned, Oregon, Justin Herbert, you know, he did so little for so long, so much of the game, but he, some big runs, obviously, but I'm still not impressed with him, as a pro prospect. We'll see how that turns out. And yeah, Wisconsin, you know, you could go up and down the field, you can just dominate the stat line, but if you're loafing in bad times and big spots, then, you know, you get the short end of the stick. Yeah, that Florida State, Arizona State Sun Bowl. I like the Arizona State quarterback. It was just a hot mess of a game. That James Blackman on Florida State, I think he just threw another interception. I don't know. That was just, it's a bad watch. I mean, Gary Danielson goes from, you know, all the premier SEC games. But he loves the Sun Bowl. And, yeah, John's right. The Sun Bowl, you always just get, like, a clunker of a game more times than not. And it starts at a weird time. Yeah, it's kind of opposite of the Belk Bowl, because the Belk Bowl is just wonky, goofy, high-scoring, hold-your-breath tempo type of game. And I had Kentucky, and I was basically hating myself most of the game until the very end because, yeah, they could not move the ball conventionally. They were basically running like the quarterback looks like a headless chicken most of the time, but he was running for first downs and not really completing many passes. And they were playing catch up the whole game. So they pulled the rabbit out of their, you know, pulled the rabbit out of the hat at the end of the game, and to win that game 37-30 was really fortunate for them. Even that Navy Kansas State game was exciting. Maybe they called like a trick play at the end of the game to get them in field goal range after they had missed a field goal the possession before that would have iced the game. So that was a well played game. That Navy coach probably has to get another job at some point. I heard he's like a commodity, but we'll see how that goes. I'm off Kyle Whittingham. I've been off Whittingham for a while. Everyone says how well prepared his teams are. Well, you know, they laid an egg the second bowl game in a row last year, Northwestern, this year, Texas. I know motivation might have not been up to full strength for them. This is 2 years in a row now where Texas has played a team that's probably more talented than them, but motivation might have been a key factor. And now we'll see what happens with Texas next year again. They're, you know, they it seems like they play better when, you know, the spotlight's not on them. Florida left a lot of points on the board. I felt like they let Virginia kind of hang around. Well, actually, the Virginia quarterback was basically throwing prayers, prayer after prayer, circus catch after circus catch. You know, Florida, they were given, I think, 14 and a half points. If that game was like on September 21st, they probably cover. I mean, Virginia just, they were making some crazy pass plays at the end and in the beginning of the game, just like circus catches, at least three circus catches, still bitter of it. Plus one, that Iowa State, just to not show against Notre Dame is a disgrace. See you next year. Cheez-It Bowl, yeah, you're right. That was, in hindsight, you know, as a clown that took Washington State, I figured their offense would have their way against the
Air Force, and you always, the theory is take the team that's playing against a triple option team when you have like a month to prepare. But not I guess that theory can't apply when it's Washington State, because they're a bunch of clowns, undisciplined fools, and Mike Leach. That was just textbook Washington State right there, to come up short of that first drive and then, yeah, just get paper cut to death on these long drives. So Air Force, 6 yards, 7 yards, 4 yards, 8 yards, 9 yards, just chewing them. And that's, it's like pouring salt on a slug, and Washington State just doesn't have the discipline to play that type of game. And good night, delights on Mike Leach. I think that was on at the same time as the USC Iowa game, Holiday Bowl. So good job, Pac-12, way to cannibalize your bowl games. Bob Diaco, definitely, his wife, his family, definitely sending Manny Diaz with Christmas cards in the near future, because that's the textbook game too, where like Miami didn't have any motivation. La Tech, they were 9-3 or whatever, but they didn't really play anybody special in that Conference USA. But if you had a good feeling about them, it paid off. Miami wasn't ready for that game. One egg I'd like to mention, and that would be Sonny Dykes, SMU Florida Atlantic Boca Bowl. I know Boca and Florida Atlantic, that's their home building, but SMU was not ready for that game whatsoever. I don't know what Sonny Dykes was doing to prepare that team for the bowl. Just a utter no-show. Shame on you, Sonny. Good night, the lights there. And the Christmas Eve Hawaii Bowl was actually pretty entertaining. I had Hawaii. It was a lucky break. There was a field goal that was through the uprights, or over the uprights, by BYU. The officials said it was no good. It was just clown car type coaching by both coaches throughout the game. And Washington State actually hired the Hawaii coach, who will probably be a good fit there. But that was an entertaining Christmas Eve bowl. That was fun to follow before Santa visited. But, yeah, it was an entertaining bowl season. I was apprehensive at first about, the games. Bowl season kind of starting later than usual this year. But it seemed to all work out for sure.
Yeah, it was a good bowl season, and a marked improvement over a year ago, or 2 years ago, whichever year it was. That was pretty blasé, but there are some good bowls this year, so I had a lot of fun with it. So it was good to see. But now let's get to the NFL, and boy, we got some excitement in that league, don't we? You talk about some upsets. I guess I did have a sense that this could happen, but the Titans going into Baltimore and shocking the world like they did, that was a sight to see. And similarly, the Sunday game, I'm not even going to explain it. I'm going to let the guys do that. But then the wild card round before it certainly had its own levels of shockers. I mean, the Titans, before going in and upsetting Baltimore, they went to New England and did the same thing against the Patriots. Texans got out an overtime win against the Bills. The Vikings do their own little shocker, beating the Saints at the Superdome. That was crazy. That went to overtime. Seahawks did what they had to do, beating the Eagles by the identical score that they did in the regular season. Both of those games are 17-9. That was a weird little quirk there. But the divisional round speaks for itself. I mean, so much going on there. So I don't want to spoil the details here. Let's go to John for the recap.
All right, I guess we'll just briefly mention the wild card round. The Texans-Bills game was so bad it was good, I guess. The Bills get up to that huge lead. Texans look completely dead, just, typical Bill O'Brien in the playoffs. And then all of a sudden, they make a furious rally and come back and eventually win in overtime. We can't forget Booger McFarland's wonderful commentary about running a draw play and then trying and saying, let's run a draw play here and then spike it. And it was third down. So the ball would have been turned over at that point. I think that comment alone might get him off Monday Night Football next year. That was just so bad. But that was just a absolutely crazy game. And then, like you mentioned, Dave, the Titans with two huge upsets, first in New England and then at Baltimore. They kind of got this magic carpet ride scenario going, but really when you think about it, it's the perfect perfect style for an upset or kind of an upset team. They have a bruising running back who you can't tackle. So if they get ahead in the game, they're just going to hand it off to him and, you know, try to run the clock and keep the other team's offense off the field. You know, that's actually a pretty good strategy against the Chiefs. I'm sure we'll talk about that game in a little bit. But, you know, and Tannehill's been making the big throws when he's had to. I mean, he hasn't thrown for much yardage, but on the game against New England, he had the huge third down play when they needed to ice it. And then last week against Baltimore, the long touchdown pass after the turnover, and then had another touchdown later in the game. So, I mean, he's been making plays when what's needed. Their defense has been opportunistic. Stopping the Ravens on those fourth and ones was really the key to that game, and kind of shifting momentum and just really, really impressive stuff out of Tennessee. I mean, you know, who could have seen this coming for – I mean, I know they played well at the end towards the end of the season, but certainly didn't see this kind of magic carpet scenario that they're on, and we'll see if they can keep it going into the conference title game. The Vikings win at New Orleans. I mean, it's funny because, like, I see all these Saints fans online. We're talking about the Packers being the worst 13-3 team of all time. Well, the Saints were 13-3 and lost in the wild card round, and the Packers are still playing. So what does that make the Saints? I think it makes them the worst 13-3 team of all time. Just another disappointing performance in the playoffs by Drew Brees and Sean Payton. Sean Payton completely bungled his timeouts at the beginning and end of the game. And really, Taysom Hill was their best quarterback in that game. I mean, Drew Brees was awful. And, you know, that's kind of been coming of occurrence for him in the playoffs the last few years. And but the Vikings, they moved on and then really didn't do anything against that Niners defense. I kind of fell into the trap of thinking that they might keep it close, that the Niners would be tight. And they're, you know, with Jimmy G and Shanahan kind of in their first, I don't know if Shanahan's been an offensive coordinator, but first game as a head coach, first playoff game for Garoppolo. And, you know, they did what they had to do and got the win. And well, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about the NFC championship in a little bit. But, and then, of course, the Packers on Sunday. I'll talk about the Chiefs game first. Bill O'Brien, like, what a fool this guy is. Like, seriously. So you get that unbelievable start. You're up 21-0. It's fourth and inches, and he's about to go for it. So you're like, all right, this is a smart play, because if you go up 28-0, like, you 28-0, I know it doesn't seem like much, but 28-0 is completely different than 24-0. At 28-0, they need four scores just to tie you, and it just the building would have been completely dead. So he has a, you know, the offense stays on the field, and then the play clock is running out. So, okay, he calls timeout. You want to get a good play in there. And then he ends up kicking the field goal. And from that moment on, it was just all downhill. And the Chiefs just did whatever they wanted on offense at that point. Got a couple turnovers and, you know, made some adjustments to slow down Houston, and that was the end of it. Honestly, a pretty embarrassing performance to be ahead 24 and what, they lose by almost 20. I mean, that's just – I mean, Bill O'Brien – you know, they have no GM. Like, I don't know who's firing him at this point. But they're not going anywhere with him. And it's kind of a shame to waste the kind of talent that they have with Watson and Hopkins and some of those other guys. I mean, they could have a really explosive team, and they're just being held back. So, terrible job out of Houston, but it did save us from the Titans-Texans AFC South battle. I said online that they should have brought back Booger and Tess if that was the game. I mean, Nance and Romo should not have deserved to call that for the AFC title game. But luckily, the Chiefs won, so we'll at least get Mahomes and company in the championship. But yeah, and then the Packers Seahawks. Honestly, the game pretty much went how I expected. I mean, the Seahawks do this in every single road playoff game. Sans the Eagles game last week, because the Eagles were just, you know, they were playing without everybody basically. They were able to control that game. But every road playoff game, the Seahawks start off really slow. They really try to commit to the run when clearly it's not what they do well, especially with all their good running backs injured. I mean, Marshawn Lynch, I mean, he's completely washed up. You can see, I mean, okay, he got like a couple 1 yard touchdowns, but you know, in the middle of the field, he was doing nothing. And they're behind 21-3 at halftime. And then finally, they let Wilson just turn it loose and they almost win the game. You know, the Packers, Rodgers had a great game. He statistically he didn't have, like, you know, 300 yards passing. I think he had, like, 250. But you could tell his play in this game was much improved compared to the end of the season, which gives me some great hope for next weekend against San Francisco. He made those clutch throws on third down when they needed it. And even throughout the game, I mean, he was just on point with everything down the field. And, you know, great to see. And, you know, it's been a – if you had told me before the season that the Packers would be in the NFC Championship game, I don't care what this point spread was going to be. I don't care, you know, where it was going to be played. I would have taken it. So certainly certainly glad they're playing this weekend. And I'm sure we'll do a quick preview of the games in a bit. But just, the playoffs this year have been great. I think we've had some bad ones the last couple of years, if I recall, like just a lot of blowouts. So it was finally good to get some exciting games. And over the first – 2 weeks, and you know, hope for some more this weekend.
Yeah, 100%. You know, the division round in particular is a very interesting study because you look at the actual final scores and they look like these are all blowouts. But three out of the four games were pretty good. Like, they were very entertaining, and there was a lot of drama in three of them. And just the utter shock that the Ravens were going through during the game, especially in the second half. I mean, you could see the air just slowly coming out of the balloon. I just had never heard that building so quiet when the Titans were just running it down their throats. It was certainly an incredibly fascinating sight to see that. And same situation for the Texans game. I'll say no more about that game because obviously many people have. Bill O'Brien is an absolute boob. I mean, even if you don't convert on the fourth down, you're on the Kansas City 14-yard line. You don't allow a return because if you remember on the kickoff right after the field goal, there's this big old return that brought him to nearly midfield, and then they exacerbate it by a fourth and – what is it, like fourth and one fake punt inside their own, what, like 20-yard line? And it's like, what are you doing? Like, it's just such horrible coaching. So, Andy, I'm going to give it to you now for the NFL playoff recap.
Oh, yeah, it was tremendous action, even going back to the wild card weekend. You know, about the Saints, I know the Saints were, you know, a good pick to go far, but I know we're a little biased. We hate everything about that ass clown team. You know, the coach is tough to take. Drew Brees is tough to take. They've got this paper tiger aura about them. You can't really – it's not tangible. I don't have any sort of stats to prove it, but they just – you know, something's fishy about them. You know, it's kind of like, you know, a little different with the Mets because the Mets don't have the same success as the Saints on a regular season basis. But, you know, the Mets just have, like, this little, like, undetectable but detectable stench around them. The Saints just like you never can go all in with the Saints because of stuff they do on wild card weekend and losing to Kirk Cousins and Dalvin Cook and company. So that wasn't super surprising. Patriots lost, that kind of was a little bit of bummer from this Mongo's opinion, but there's something going on with that Titan mojo. You know, Derrick Henry just seems to be getting better and better. And better game to game. You know, it's Tannehill. I think he's thrown for like a combined like 160 yards in the two games. I mean, he threw for 80 yards against Baltimore on Saturday night, but they just, who knows, they got something going. And they've, you know, Nance talked about it on Sunday. Like, if they do beat the Chiefs, who they've already beaten the regular season, like, that would mean they have beaten on like consecutive weeks. They beat the Texans, albeit without, you know, they rested their starters, but they were still the AFC South champs. Then they beat New England. They were the AFC East champs. They beat the Ravens, the North champs, and now if they beat the Chiefs, the tall task, then they would beat the West champs in the span of 4 weeks in a row. That'd be kind of impressive. So we'll see what happens there. I don't really have any more words about the Buffalo Bills. You know, it's a domino effect, really. I mean, when Houston was up 24-0, I was just like, This is all because of Sean McDermott, basically. Like, Houston shouldn't even have been in that position. But the way Kansas City started that game was you know, you couldn't start worse. But they were able to dig themselves out of it, you know, largely in part to Bill O'Brien just being a complete – Dave, you call you, that's a great way to describe him. He's an absolute boob. And you just – you look at him, and he's just like – he's just like scratching his head. He just like he just looks incompetent. He looks like a you know, no offense to substitute teachers, but like a substitute teacher that just like doesn't get respected. Like when the high school students see him, they're just like, we're not giving this guy the time of day. He just looks like that. Conducting someone silently, like even you know, Mike tweets a bunch of stupid stuff, Francesa, but his tweet about O'Brien calling the timeout just to, you know, do what anyone should have done. You don't really need a timeout to do that. And just like, you can't be wasting these timeouts, Bobo. And but he did. And like, you can't fire him. Like, the Texans, it's not that they can fire him. You know, they just have to bring him back next year. And it's like having a lame duck coach, but it's not officially a lame duck coach. Like they got to find something incriminating on him to like, get rid of him, I guess. But, you know, and they are, as John mentioned, like Watson's talented and they're wasting his talents with him at the helm. So that was interesting. Yeah, Dave, you mentioned the upset of, you know, the Ravens going down. It's just weird, you know. It's, you know, they're 14-2. I don't know if the layoff hurt them. They didn't really need the game against the Steelers, so you know, a lot of those guys didn't play, you know, against, you know, Duck Hodges or whatever. But maybe that layoff had something to do with it. 2 years in a row now where Lamar has had less than stellar numbers, you know, in the playoffs, but you know, he's still 22, 23 or whatever, so you would think he'd figure it out. Ingram wasn't Ingram, and they really didn't like change anything that to try to settle the game down. You know, they're just kind of helter skelter. You know, Harbaugh's always gonna just do that, I guess, right? Now what worked for them in September is gonna work for him in October, is going to work for him in January, but, you know, it just didn't work out, and they were just playing catch-up from the get-go. I mean, a lot of their drives ended, you know, deep in Titan territory, just kind of a weird game for them. And, yeah, that Packers-Seahawks game, that haunting sequence for the Seahawks fans is that drop by Malik Turner with about maybe 5 minutes left in the game. That would have given Seattle a first down around midfield. I don't know what they're doing. They don't let Russell Wilson. I don't know what the argument is, because it's like, are they saying they need to just like be very unsuccessful establishing the run, and that's what makes Russell Wilson so good in the second half? I don't buy that. It's time to abandon the run game and maybe think a new philosophy for next year, because, you know, just let Russell kind of have carte blanche to run the offense rather than ground and pound. And yeah, they're like a fungus. They hang around for a while, but you know, just I think they had a point differential of less than 10 this year. Like, eventually these close games, you're going to end up on the short end of the stick at some point. And it happened to be last Sunday. I mean, you can't win every one possession game. So, you know, at some point, you know, the other shoe drops and it happened. It was a very fun game. Russo, we made a good point, and he I don't think he's wrong. Like, Aaron Rodgers makes, you know, the $30 million or whatever he makes a year, $30+ million a year on those two throws on that last drive, you know, on 3rd and 8 and 3rd and 9, whatever. Because you know, I don't think any other quarterback in the league right now like can make that throw or make those throws. And those are huge throws at that time of the game. And so we'll see what happens moving forward. Looking forward to the conference championship games.
Yep, it's going to be a really, really fun set of matchups. And I'm kind of looking at the odds right now. I'll give the odds to everybody in our podcast audience. We'll start with the AFC Championship game in Kansas City. The Chiefs are a 7-point favorite in this game, and the over-under for the game is 53 points. After that, we will see the NFC Championship game in Santa Clara between the 49ers and the Packers. The Packers visiting. And an interesting footnote for Aaron Rodgers, who is from the Bay Area, so he's in a way going home for this game. The 49ers are a 7.5-point favorite, and the over-under for that game is 45 points. There are some late-breaking news on George Kittle. He was held out of practice today. I think he's going to play, but then the question is he going to be effective? So let's break down these two conference championships. You know, it could be some good juice in both of these games. John, I'll start with you with the preview of the championship round.
Yeah, obviously excited for Green Bay and San Francisco. I kind of like I've been seeing all these analysts saying, the first game it was just such a huge blow. If you look in the stats, there's no way you could look at it and say, oh yeah, Green Bay has got a chance, and you could take nothing from that game to say that it's going to be any different. And like, okay, that's why they play the games on the field and not on paper. I mean, yeah, the Packers are just absolutely horrible in that first Sunday night game against the Niners in November. But a couple of important things to note in that game is, Bulaga went out in the first quarter, their tackle, and they just couldn't block the Niners' defensive line. So he's going to be fine for this game. I think they can get off to a little better start. I mean, they were put way behind the eight ball because there were some turnovers, and they just got off to such a slow start in the game, and they got behind. And you can't do that against the Niners' pass rush. I think once getting off to a better start, they'll be able to get into the game plan more. I trust LaFleur to make adjustments. He did a great job in the division games this year, making adjustments from the first game to the second game. Like I said before, Rodgers, he did not have a great season statistically. I mean, for most quarterbacks, they would have taken his stats. But, he obviously has really lofty expectations and goals. And if you just watched him play towards the end of the season, he was missing just a bunch of throws and just stuff was off. But he completely just flipped that around. Like, that was the Aaron Rodgers of the Aaron Rodgers of old in the game against Seattle. Especially with those throws late in the game. If that guy shows up on Sunday, I think it's going to be a really close game. Again, I think you can't discount the fact here that all the pressure is on the 49ers in this game. They're over a touchdown favorite. So I could see Shanahan and Garoppolo getting tight. The Packers' defense, one thing they can do is get pressure on the quarterback. And if they can hit Jimmy early on in the game and maybe force him into some mistakes, we've seen him throw interceptions before. I think they can hang around and, listen, my team's in the NFC Championship. I'm not going to say that they can't win. So, I'm not going to say that they're going to win, but I definitely think it's going to be a closer game than it was in November. In the fourth quarter, it'll definitely be a good game. And hopefully it bounces, hopefully it bounces the Packers away. And as for the AFC, the Titans have the perfect game plan to go against the Chiefs. The Chiefs' run defense is still not very good, so they can run the ball, keep Mahomes off the field. I could see the Titans winning again. Definitely like them over the 7 points. So I would say if I'm wagering, and I will, I'll take both dogs definitely on Sunday afternoon.
I would add to that the money lines for both underdogs are plus 270 each, so you could get some pretty serious value. Like, if you just, took both of them and one of them hit, you're ahead. So it's very interesting stuff there, John. Let's now go to Andy, then, and get your preview of the conference championship round.
Yeah, Dave, I think both teams on the road are live dogs. I know, Kansas City looked like Kansas City second quarter on in that game against Houston and, scored 51 points or whatever it was. And, now the easy thing to say and assume is, okay, either
you know, they're back. They're just, you know, moving forward. They can just execute, and they'll take care of business against Tennessee. But it's not that easy. And, you know, it's still Andy Reid. And as John mentioned, Tennessee can slow that game down. You know, they'll run the ball a lot. Like, quick aside, Viking game, that game was less than 3 hours long. You know, whatever the opposite of a network sweat dream is, that was the opposite, because, you know, Zimmer was so conservative, and I think Garoppolo only threw the ball like twice in the second half. That game was less than 3 hours long for an NFL playoff game. That was pretty remarkable. But anyway, what I'm trying to say for that is Tennessee would probably want that game against Kansas City to be less than 3 hours long, because that means there was a lot of running, a lot of time-chewing possessions. Tennessee would want to shorten that game. You know, Zimmer tried to win that game against San Francisco like 13-9. That wasn't going to happen. But, you know, Tennessee with Henry against Kansas City's, you know, suspect run defense, you know, they're trying to do some play action with Tannehill. I mean, he might have an actual game where he throws over 200 yards. You know, he'll probably need that if they want to get that upset in Kansas City. But, you know, their defense is a lot better than Houston's too. So, you know, it's not 85 Bears, but it's competent. You know, the Texans defense is like a ghost. It doesn't exist. And so I think the Chiefs will have a little more, you know, competition and defense and resistance. So I really don't have no, like, dog in the fight. I will bet on both underdogs. So I would like to see this Tennessee Titan magic continue. And just, it would be funny if they advance to the Super Bowl, because then you just get a lot of people being like, Tennessee doesn't deserve to be in the Super Bowl. But yeah, hey, if they win, they deserve to be there. So we'll see what happens. And I am not sold on Jimmy G. And for all the good things Shanahan does, you know, with his offense and with the plays that he you know, he's innovative, you know, that's been his thing. He does get a little weird in big games in the second half. And so I worry about that. And I am still not sold on Jimmy G. Push comes to shove. I know the Packers, you know, it's Davante Adams and a bunch of, you know, he doesn't really have a ton of weapons to throw to. And Aaron Jones is really, you know, formidable from a running standpoint. But it's all Aaron Rodgers. And Checker knows. He knows more about the Packers than I do. But, yeah, push comes to shove. I don't have any analytics. I don't have any stats in front of me. But I don't like betting against Aaron Rodgers. Do you like betting against Aaron Rodgers? You know, if you would, you get Aaron Rodgers getting that many points, again, like, the back door is wide open. Who cares what happened on that Sunday night in San Francisco in the regular season? That was a different game. Rodgers was under a lot of pressure that night and just didn't work out for them. But that was also when San Francisco was, you know, coming into stride, beating everybody, embarrassing the Rams on television shortly thereafter. So I expect both games to be very entertaining and close. And so I will take the underdogs. I mean, the road teams have been pretty successful either covering or winning outright this edition of the playoffs. So we'll see if that can continue in a championship weekend.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm pretty much in the same boat. I certainly am on the underdog in the Kansas City game. I like Tennessee a lot with the points. It's not quite as obvious for me with the NFC game, but if you ask me to take, you know, like a gun to my head scenario, I would take Green Bay too, because you just cannot underestimate, you know, a guy like Aaron Rodgers in a big spot. And I kind of agree with you on the point with Jimmy G too, Andy. I think this is a guy that's relatively untested, and there's too many assumptions to make, you know, if you just assume that they're just going to blow away the Packers. Because number one, I think the Packers defense is pretty good, And so I think it's going to be a pretty Cardwell game. We'll see. I don't want to mush anything, so I'll stop. But I guess we'll give it to you for some other thoughts. How much time do we have? I guess we could just wrap it up here. So final thoughts, and John, we'll go to you first.
Yeah, we can't believe the season is coming to an end. You know, it's bittersweet, but, you know, we have to close the book at some point on the season. You know, maybe we'll get into the XFL a little bit when February starts, but the true football season is coming to an end. Certainly excited that the Packers are playing, and we'll see. Hopefully they can get to another Super Bowl, and I think any of the four matchups that we could get would be entertaining matchups. I think, you know, the executives, like Andy was saying, might not be happy with Tennessee in the Super Bowl, but hey, if they would have earned it if they get there. So, you know, it should be fun to watch, and we'll definitely, I think we're going to get a good Super Bowl with any of the outcomes this year.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too, John. I think regardless of what the combination of teams is, every single possible matchup is going to, it looks like it's on pace to be a close game. So I love your point, Andy, about how the Titans have the opportunity to beat literally every other division's leader in the, you know, in the last 3 or so weeks. That's pretty good. So I'll give it to you for final thoughts.
Yeah, it just buckle down for these last 3 games, including the Super Bowl, and then just focus on college basketball. From a gambling standpoint, there's some golf that's going to be starting. You know, Jim Nantz will be at Torrey, Tiger's event. So there's some silver linings, you know, to coincide with pigskin season coming to a screeching halt until August. But, you know, some of the coaching carousel moves, you know, I'm not sold on Stefanski. You know, I wish nothing but mediocrity for Stefanski with the Browns. I'm not sure about McCarthy going to Dallas. I mean, I know you had to get rid of Garrett, but, like, if you're going to replace Garrett with McCarthy, like, then why'd you get rid of Garrett to begin with? But I know Garrett had to go. But, I mean, you're basically trading like a C minus for a C minus, you know, like Joe Judge, you're going to get Joe Judge and maybe Garrett and Mike Shula. Like that's what we're going to do now with the Giants. Like they are just like, they are thinking in the prehistoric era and from the football standpoint. And, I hope Matt Rhule, like, and Brady, Joe Brady, they, if they go 7-9 or 8-8 next year, like, people better not, like, rush to judgment and say, like, they're going to be disasters. But they're going to expect, like, instant results, and it's not really fair, but that's life these days. You get the coach, and they better deliver right away. Like, you got to give them a little bit of time. You know, Adam Gase is going to be going on his 3rd year for the Jets. So, you know, if Adam Gase gets 3 years, then some of these guys should definitely get 3 years. So it'll be interesting to see how these new coaches and new places pan out. Oh, yeah, I think Freddie Kitchens might have been a candidate for a spot on Joe Judge's team. So, I mean, good luck. Good luck to the Giants next year with you know, the Patriots special teams guys. So, yeah. I don't know.
You know,
it sounds like McDaniels, as good as he is as an OC, he must just be a real, real piece of work to work with, because, I don't know, like, Belichick is vouching for Joe Judge, not McDaniels. I don't know. There must be something going on behind the scenes there, but we shall see.
Yeah. Absolutely. There really is a lot of coaching news. John, do you have any other thoughts on the coaching scenarios? Because you can even go back to, like, where Lane Kiffin went to Ole Miss, and you have, you know, Ron Rivera going to the Redskins. I mean, there's so much to talk about here. Anything else you wanted to add to that before we close?
Yeah, sure. I as someone who saw Mike McCarthy up close and personal for, what, 10 years, I mean, this is not going to work out in Dallas. I mean, he's talking about how like he used the entire year to reframe his look at football. He's into analytics now. That's such fucking bullshit. I cannot wait till he like punts from the 40-yard line in the first game on Sunday Night Football, and everyone will be like, "Oh my God, the same Mike McCarthy." Yeah, he's watching analytics, all right. And that's just Andy's exactly right. It's like, okay, if Jason Garrett was a C-, like, maybe McCarthy is a C+. It's just not going to work out. And I guess he lied to Jerry Jones when he said he watched every play of the Cowboys season this year. I guess he said that to Jerry Jones and it wasn't true. So that's just not going to work out well, in my opinion. Rule, he has a great history of turning teams around by like their third year. So I agree. People expecting big things out of him next year are probably going to be disappointed. But give him a cut, like 2 or 3 years, the Carolina could be a really good team, and it'll be interesting to see what they do with Cam if they bring back Cam Newton, or what really could happen is what if they give the Bengals like hundreds of draft picks and go get Joe Burrow at number one. That's a possibility. Although the Bengals would probably be really stupid to do that, but hey, it's the Bengals. You never know. Joe Judge, I have no idea where that came from. You just got to laugh at the Giants at this point. I don't know. That's all you can say. I guess we'll see. That's it. But for the college, we kind of touched on Leach earlier. Don't think that's going to work out. And then Kiffin, I could see Kiffin doing better than Leach for sure, just because he has experience in the SEC already. There's rumors now that Fuente might leave Virginia Tech for Baylor. That could be his destination. We'll see if that turns into what happens. Trying to think if there was anything else. Oh yeah, Andy mentioned Rolovich going to Wazoo now. I don't know. I mean, if he kind of runs the same offense that Leach was doing, that air raid or that run and shoot. So, but I guess you could see that fitting. I don't know who Hawaii is going to get. That's a really tough job. And Rolovich was a former player there, so I don't know who they're going to get now. Trying to think of any of the lower level jobs that opened up. I can't think of any of the group of five ones off the top of my head. I'd have to pull up a list, but I think we covered the main ones for the most part. And like always, just when you think the coaching carousel has stopped, it ticks right up again. So I'm sure there'll be a couple more changes before it all settles down.
Yep. No doubt about it. Well, that's going to do it for our playoff in review program. I want to get us back together during Super Bowl week to preview the Super Bowl, whoever the two teams are. So hopefully I'll keep you guys on text and we'll hopefully get that together. But for now, I say goodnight and enjoy your holiday weekend if you are off on Monday. Thanks, fellas, and all the best. And good luck to all your scenarios down the road, too.
All right, Dave. Thanks. We'll see you.
All right. Take care.
All right. Good luck, everyone.
Thanks
nice
so much.
Show. Bye-bye.
Good luck, fellas. All right, that's our program tonight, and thanks to our crew, Andy and John, and we gave our shout-out to Biebs as well. Enjoy this the NFC and the AFC Championship games. That's on Sunday, and we hope that this has been informative for you. I'm Dave Medina. You can find us at DidCow on Twitter, on the web at DidCow.com, on Apple Podcasts, Dave in the City Out West. We're back tomorrow with random questions. We'll see you next time.